ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. That's all right. That level is okay. It's the next level is also okay. After that, not so good. Yeah, up to there is okay. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. If you're wondering why there's this monstrosity of a big seat arrangement here, the reason is because the whole concept of this kind of auditorium militates against the Vedic, or one major factor in the Vedic understanding of how knowledge is imparted and what is the proper etiquette in that regard. There's one story, I have to find it out, I've told it, I read it a long time ago. But there were some rishis who had heard of one king, Kshatriya. The rishis were brahmanas, the king was a Kshatriya. That's the way things were in those days. Nowadays the king can be an unmarried middle-aged woman, as it is in West Bengal. Brahmin caste. So they had heard that he had knowledge of one kind of vidya, one kind of knowledge of some technical subject, which they wished to learn from him. So they went to his kingdom, went to his palace. They were received respectfully, seated on a high seat above the king. And after being duly honored, the king asked what could he do for them, because generally if brahmanas comes to a king, they want something from him, and the king is obliged to provide it. So they said, well, we heard you have this particular kind of knowledge, we'd like to learn it from you. And he said, well, I can give you villages and gold and horses, I can't give you that. So anyway, you please go to your quarters and rest for the night. So when they went to their quarters, they thought, well, why didn't he want to give it to us? What's the problem? And then one of them suggested, well, we were sitting above him. So how can you instruct someone who's sitting above you? Now you're getting the idea. So they came back the next morning and sat below him and asked if he could instruct them in that knowledge. So he instructed them. After he had finished instructing them, he sat them up above him again. So that's the point. Knowledge flows down like water, and it's impolite to sit above one's teacher. And these are basic points of etiquette. So I'm just making a bit of a point here. Well, I pointed this out, and then others kindly made the arrangement. On Wednesday, I gave a talk in English in the Panchatattva extension about the pastimes, or the mention of Nrisimhadev in Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita. I recounted a particular pastime which is described in one chapter of the Antya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in ecstasy had fallen in the sea and had been captured in the fishing net by a fisherman. This was at night. And what had happened, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had vanished from his devotees. He had run off in ecstasy. They were trying to find him. Toward the end of the night, wandering along the beach looking for him, they came across a fisherman. You could understand he was a fisherman because he had his fishing nets over his shoulder. And he looked petrified. He was behaving very strangely. And they were coming from opposite directions, and he warned them, don't go that way. There's a ghost that way. So Swarup Damodar, who was the leader of the group of devotees, unofficial leader of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri, he got some idea what was going on. So he said, "What was that? What was that about a ghost? What's that? What happened? Tell us." So he said, the fisherman said that I felt my net becoming very heavy, and I thought, I've got a really big fish this time. But when I pulled it up, I saw it was a dead body. It was actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wasn't dead, but he was unconscious in ecstasy, had fallen in the sea. Unconscious in ecstasy. And he had a very long body, and his arms and legs, they were separated at the joints from his torso. So there was just some skin in between. This was one kind of ecstasy, that ecstatic symptom that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes exhibited. And it looked like a dead body, but it was making some sound, gong, gong, gong. And when I touched that body, I started shivering and my hair standing on end. I became very afraid. So I chanted the name, Nrsimha, Nrsimha. But usually at night, I'm fishing and I call out the name, Nrsimha, Nrsimha, to protect me from ghosts. Because ghosts wander around at night. And whenever ghosts come, I chant Nrsimha, Nrsimha, and the ghosts go away. But when I touch this dead body, then the shivering and the hair standing, all this increased more and more. So actually the shivering and hair standing on ends were symptoms of ecstasy from touching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But because he was so afraid, he was so overcome by fear, he thought it was some haunted by a ghost symptoms. So Swarup Damodar understood everything. And then he told him, don't worry, it's good luck for you. I'm a big exorcist. So Swarup Damodar put his hand on his head, chanted a few mantras, slapped him hard 3 times, said, don't worry, the ghost went away. And the fisherman, psychological effect, thought, oh, okay, now I'm all right. So he said, could you take us to that dead body? And it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, I told that mention of Nrsimha. And after the class, one Nataji, who appeared to be from, not from India, from overseas, asked me the question, was the fisherman a Muslim or was he a Vaishnava? She couldn't understand because it seemed that she thought that, well, if he was a Vaishnava, how could it be a fisherman? And if he was a Muslim, how could it be chanting the names of Nrsimha? Only Vaishnavas chant the name of Nrsimha. I thought that question was something like, there's a Bengali saying, Prabhupada sometimes used to quote that, it's like after reading the whole Ramayana, so I read the whole Ramayana, and at the end my question is that Sita, Sita is the husband of who? The question is so absurd, it means you didn't understand anything at all about the whole Ramayana, because the Ramayana is about Rama and Sita, and Sita's a woman, so she's not the husband of anyone. Of course, in those days, they didn't have gay marriages, where Maybe in a gay marriage you could call one of them the husband, I don't know. But it's such an absurd question. How do you begin to answer it? So I thought it was something like that. It demonstrated a complete lack of knowledge of anything about Krishna consciousness beyond ISKCON, which might be considered by some a quality, but if we're living in India, maybe, especially if we're living in India, maybe not. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but it's not the only society for Krishna Consciousness. And Krishna Consciousness didn't begin in New York City in 1966. For that matter, it didn't begin in Navadvip in 1486. So the fisherman, so I replied that anyway, most of the people in Orissa, in Puri and Orissa, they eat fish, but they also have very deep feeling for Jagannath. Now we may think, well, how is that possible? Because if you're a Vaishnav, you can't do such a horrible thing as eating fish. It's a bit difficult for us to understand. It's a long and deep-rooted cultural anomaly that most people in Bengal and Orissa eat fish, which we don't at all recommend. But it's also a long-standing cultural attribute of most of the people of Orissa, that they have a very deep feeling for Lord Jagannath, and many of the people of Bengal have a deep feeling for their Vaishnavas. Traditionally, Bengali society has, Hindu society has been divided among Vaishnavas and Shaktas. Shaktas means worshippers of Shakti, which in Bengal mostly comes out as worship of Durga and Kali. But in Orissa, there are Vaishnavas, Smartas, Shaktas, Shaivas, and they all worship Jagannath. Mayavadis, all kinds of things. What we would call Sahajiyas. So when we say Vaishnava, we tend to think of someone within, we might tend to think of someone within ISKCON, or someone who's very strictly following rules. And that is a good definition of a Vaishnava, but the broader definition of Vishnu Yasya Devata Iti Vaishnava, whose God, the God they worship is Vishnu, that is a Vaishnava. Now, as I said, the fishermen in Orissa and Bengal, as far as I know, they're not Muslims. Even in East Bengal, they're mostly Hindus. And at least in Bangladesh, in East Bengal, the fishing caste, they mostly consider themselves to be Vaishnavas. That means they chant Hare Krishna. They consider that in their home they're oriented around Vishnu, or the fishermen in Puri, who even today there are so many fishermen in Puri. You may have seen them if you go early morning to the beach at Puri. They still have this, what people would call a primitive kind of canoe, but it does the job. This particular kind of boat which they make, and they're very strong waves incoming, and they have to fight the waves to get out to sea. They literally almost have to fight. It takes tremendous strength to get the boat out when there's strong waves coming in. They go out and catch their fish, and then people eat the fish. And actually it's stated in Shastra, as quoted in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that even to eat fish in Puri is the same as eating Havishyana. It's considered very pious to eat Havishyana, which means rice boiled with dal with no salt or any spices or any such thing. So the idea is that just to be in Puri is pious. It's not encouraging eating fish, but just to be there is pious. And anyway, proper Vaishnavas, they don't eat Havishyana or fish. They eat Vishnu Prasad, or in Puri, Jagannath Prasad. So, many Hindus, they may not consider themselves particular Vaishnava, but they'll worship, in Puri, they'll worship Jagannath. And they may also go to, there's a Durga temple just at the entrance to town. What's that? Ma? Can anyone remember? Can't remember. There's so many Durga. Some of them will be more attached to Durga, but they'll all worship Jagannath. Durga is also the sister of Jagannath. Subhadra is the sister of Krishna. So for devotees coming from outside India, they may think it's very strange, because Srila Prabhupada, he presented Krishna consciousness to us in the purest and best form, free from any culture, well, not free, but with the pure Vaishnav culture. But within India, it's been practiced over generations, and there have been different sadhus and different influences, and for many people, they may worship Jagannath, and they may also worship Durga, and nowadays they may worship Sai Baba, and who knows what they're doing. It's as Srila Prabhupada said, Hinduism is a hodgepodge of concocted ideas conducted under the Mayavad philosophy. Not very flattering. But he also said that, it's true, of course, but it's also true, as Srila Prabhupada said, that in India people are naturally Krishna conscious. So what does that mean when we see that most people are more or less materialistic, it seems? But Krishna consciousness is very deeply in the culture. That's a major reason why, that so many people in India are taking up Krishna consciousness under the influence of ISKCON. Whereas in other countries, they're not. It's a major reason. Because people have the cultural background. It's not just a matter of some culture, but this land is particularly meant for people who in previous lives have cultivated Krishna consciousness, who have followed the Varnashram system, have followed the Vedic culture. By the arrangement of Krishna, people who are pious are born in this land. It's specifically meant for that. It's clearly stated in the 5th canto of Bhagavatam and again in the 11th canto that this land is especially meant for practicing Krishna consciousness, or at least following the Varnashram system and becoming elevated. Different people are, according to their previous life's activities, they're placed in different parts of the world. Someone with a particular kind of karma is placed in America. Someone in a particular kind of karma is placed in India. Nowadays there may be many devotees in previous lives who are being born all over the world, but previously it was it was only in India. It wasn't before Srila Prabhupada went to the West that people started taking birth in the West who had practiced Krishna consciousness in a previous life. So it can be that someone has faith in the name of Nrsimha to drive away ghosts, but at the same time he doesn't have the same understanding of Nrsimha, or how to worship Nrsimha as we do, being fortunate to have had the guidance in the pure Vaishnav Sampradaya from Srila Prabhupada. So they'll chant Nrsimha. They may even have some impersonal understanding, or mostly fishermen, they don't have any understanding. They're not educated. Nowadays, probably they know how to read and write and how to operate a cell phone. But traditionally, fishermen, there's no, the only education they get is how to catch fish and maybe how to sell them also. They don't need any more education than that. But they'll also have faith in, because that's the culture that they're raised in, just like if you're raised in a Christian culture, you have faith in Jesus. Of course, it's not that it's all the same, because Nrsimha is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the understanding that Jesus is God is a misunderstanding. So people may be raised in the culture, and the culture gets all mixed up with so many things. But even in the even in Vedic culture, there is room for meat eating. It's not that it's completely banned. Slaughterhouses are banned. There's no such thing as having slaughterhouses for mass execution of animals. But under certain conditions, some people may eat meat. Kshatriyas may eat meat. Not daily. They have to go and kill an animal, then offer it in sacrifice. And some Brahmins would eat meat also, the meat that was offered in the sacrifice. Not Vaishnavas, because Vaishnavas only take food offered to Krishna. And Shudras, they could also eat meat. If the animal is offered in sacrifice, you must have read it in Srila Prabhupada's books. That's allowed. It's not encouraged, but it's allowed. So that people don't just wantonly eat meat. If it's once a month, that limits it. Instead of every day. So, fish eating is mentioned in Manu, in Manu Sanghita. It's not mentioned, it's not given a high rating by any means, but it is mentioned that people, some people eat fish. So, we're not encouraging that, but at the same time, we should understand that there is a very broad Vaishnava. There are many people who feel attached to Krishna without having a clear understanding of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada has very kindly imparted it to us. So they may also be considered Vaishnavas in a broader sense. And in fact, it's these people who are mostly becoming devotees and initiated in ISKCON through the Nam Hatha preaching in Bengal, in which there are literally thousands of people who are initiated devotees. Probably 99.9% of them are initiated by His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaj. So these are all, how are there thousands and thousands of devotees initiated following the pure Vaishnava principles? They weren't previously. Probably 99.8% or so were previously eating fish, but they felt an attachment to Krishna also, because that's going on in their culture simultaneously, side by side. So when they got the proper teachings, many of them, they took it up. And they were happy to take it up. Now they're following it properly. So it may be difficult for devotees who know Krishna consciousness only through ISKCON to understand this. But the very fact that for instance, Rath Yatra in Puri, how many people come each year? More than 1 million people come each year in Puri at Rath Yatra. Well, that means they have some feeling for Jagannath, doesn't it? Certainly most of them are not pure vegetarians, but they have a feeling for Jagannath. You can't deny that they have a feeling. It's not just something. Why would they come? Many of them, they're very poor people. They save up. Maybe they save up for 2 or 3 years to be able to make a journey to Puri. And most of them, there's no place for them to sleep. They just sleep on the streets here and there during the Rath Yatra. It's very troublesome and difficult for them, but they're very happy to do that. There are so many people in Gujarat, you'll see so many people walking on the road to Dwarka. And many of them come from hundreds of miles. They walk, of course they could take a bus, but they walk for hundreds of miles to go to Dwarka. Why? Because they have a feeling for Dwarkadish. I remember a few years ago reading in the paper that some politician wanted to have a big program in Dwarka. So what they do, they call people from all the neighboring towns and they bring them in truckloads. This is kind of thing that goes on in politics in India. They bring truckloads of people and they pay them to go to their rally. And in this way, it makes them look very popular. If someone does a political rally and 10,000 people come, that makes him look like he's very popular. Although everyone knows that 9,998, that means his wife and his, except his wife and his kid, everyone's paid to go. Well, maybe not. There are a few party members also. So he did it in Dwarka, and usually when you do that, very poor people come, but they found they had a tremendous response. So many people wanted to come. But they didn't go to the rally, they all went to take darshan of Dwarkadish. They thought, we're getting a free ride to Dwarka and getting paid for it. Okay, let's go, we'll go and take darshan of Dwarkadish. They may have gone to his rally also. But the main thing is the temple suddenly had, unexpectedly, a special festival day. There's thousands and thousands of people. The people had the feeling. It's not just something they're doing as a ritual. There's a feeling there. We can't deny that. They may also be doing so many things that we wouldn't do or we shouldn't do, but there's a feeling for Krishna there. He's saying, is he a Muslim or a Vaishnav? Well, maybe he was both. There's that book there, Muslim Devotees of Krishna. And we see up to the present. Now, as Srila Prabhupada noted in one purport, that previously there was no bad feelings between the Muslims and Hindus. And that was true to a large extent, although since the Muslims have come to India, there has always been some tension, and particularly there have been many atrocities perpetrated by Muslims on Hindus. I'm saying the word Hindu in a very broad sense here because it's the term that fits, although it's not a Shastric term. And in our lifetimes, Islam, or in my lifetime, I'm older than most of you here, Islam has become a militant force in the world, and Islam has become the prominent face of Islam is what they call extremism, fundamentalism. But notwithstanding that, there are many Muslims in India, even today, who do while still identifying themselves as a Muslim, still take part in Krishna conscious activities. Srila Prabhupada noted more than once, he said about Janmashtami, he said all the Hindus in India celebrate Janmashtami, and even many Muslims do also. Many Muslims, they were castes who were forcibly converted, but they still, generation after generation, maintained their feelings for Krishna or for Hindu culture in general. I've personally seen at several Rath Yatras in different parts of India, Muslims walking along the side, pulling the rope, taking prasadam. So was he a Muslim or a Vaishnav? He probably, in the strict sense of the term, wasn't either. The fisherman who called out, Nrsimha, Nrsimha. If you asked him if he was a Vaishnav, he'd probably say yes. If you asked him if he was worshipper of Durga, he'd probably say yes. We can't understand in a broad sense. Does he worship Vishnu? Yes, and worships all the, mostly Hindus, they worship all different gods. It's a very complex thing, which no one worked out what Hinduism is yet, including the Hindus. But it doesn't matter to them that much. They're not in such a, not so concerned to define everything exactly. Anyway, for devotees from the West who come to live in India, it would be advisable to try to familiarize yourself with, at least to some extent, with the broader culture all around you, which is conducive for Krishna consciousness in a way that's, it's just not there in the West or in China or wherever you may be from. It's not, we want to reproduce that in the West without all the added bad factors. We should know what is Vaishnava culture. We don't want to spread the bad things about Indian culture. We don't want to spread Bollywood culture. But we do want to spread Vaishnava culture. And it is very different from Western culture. Although traditionally Western culture was much more religious than it is at the present time. You may know I made a book recently called Women, Masters or Mothers, which has become quite controversial because it advocates things such as women taking a subdued social role, separation of men and women. But that was normal in the West also. It's when I went to church in the 1960s, going to church, Catholic church, men on one side, the women on the other. No one told them to do it, that's what they do. The women cover their heads. For instance, the culture was, they don't go to, neither men nor women went to church in shorts. They would wear what was called their Sunday best. They would wear their best clothes to go to church out of respect, because it's a place of God. These are basic cultural understandings all over the world, and that the full culture was there and it still is there to some extent in India. So we should find out the best culture and try and establish that all over the world. Unfortunately, Indian people themselves are enamored of the West and they think that everything Western is the best. And course, we're talking East and West here. Spiritual considerations go beyond East and West, or male and female. But as long as we're living in this world, we have to live according to some social norms. So the Vedic culture is best for practicing Krishna consciousness. And the Western culture is a disaster. It's based on the misunderstandings arising from Darwin's theory, Freud's... Well, Freud was one mental speculator. There's so many philosophers who don't... So many philosophers have shaped the Western society, apart from professional, what we might call professional philosophers, such as Popper and Wittgenstein. There are also people have been very influential, like John Lennon. Srila Prabhupada, of course, met John Lennon. Have all of you heard of John Lennon? Maybe the Indians haven't. Maybe the younger generation Westerners haven't either, because these people come and go. They may be someone very popular in one generation, may be forgotten in the next. Have you heard of John Lennon? Coming from the West, young people in the West have also heard of him. Okay, all right. I'm asking because I think it was last year in Dublin in Ireland, is at the Rath Yatra there, one devotee was distributing this book, Chant and Be Happy. And he had the picture of George Harrison and John Lennon. So I asked the devotee, the young people, have they heard of George Harrison? They say most of them have heard of him. You might have to remind them, but they don't care about him at all. Whereas in my generation, just open the book, Krishna book, and show sign from George. That's it, you sold the book. Really, it was like that. You see, because George Harrison appreciated this book, 90% of the people would buy it. He was so influential. And he wasn't even the most influential Beatle. John Lennon, I guess John was number one, Paul number two, George three, and Ringo number four, something like that. There was a time when, among the other controversial things that John Lennon did, he said once that now we're more popular than Jesus, referring to the Beatles. Which was true in one sense, that the Beatles were in the newspapers a lot more than Jesus was. And these songbooks, if you want, you can, instead of holding them, you can collect them and bring them up. And the Beatles would fill stadiums of screaming fans, literally screaming. Whereas even the most popular of Christian preachers couldn't do that. So in one sense it was true, although that statement became very unpopular in America. In England people didn't care. England's more atheistic than America. But now Jesus is still popular, and John Lennon gradually is getting forgotten. Anyway, I'm just saying, John Lennon, these people, they've been very influential in the Western world. It's a horrible society. Well, Srila Prabhupada, what did he say? Cat and dog society, pig society, and so on. You've read Prabhupada's books, I hope. So you can read all these things. And of course, India is following that also. But this Vedic culture, we should try to understand and bring that to the whole world, Varnashram culture. Those who are living in India, who come from the West, they can take advantage of that. Of course, Mayapur is the spiritual capital. You may think, well, why bother about anything else outside? Well, the capital means there are other places also. And practically throughout this whole land, the whole land is special. the most important place in the universe for spiritual advancement, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. There are so many holy rivers here, holy places visited by Krishna, Rama, other avatars, Vamana, Nrsimha, Buddha also. So many places sanctified by so many great holy people who have lived and traveled in different places. There are literally thousands of holy places in India. Literally. Many of them are not known, they're hardly known even beyond a small area. For instance, there's one town in South India called Salem. There are also many towns in America called Salem, which is named after some place in the Bible. But Salem in South India comes from the Sanskrit Shailam, which means hill. So it's a different etymology. And just outside that town is a small village with urbanization, it's all become merged together, called Ayodhya Patanam, which means the town Ayodhya. So in that town, so we hear. It may not be in any presently extant Shastra, but Ram also visited there. And the temple is there to the present day. So like that, there's so you go, so many places you go and say, you may be going to some preaching program in some village, and they say, oh, just 15 kilometers from here, this is a place where this and this happened. And it's not only Vaishnav, there are so many important places of Shiva worship, so many important places of Kali worship. Now we may say, well, Kali worship, that's also part of the Vedic corpus. Some of the places are in Pakistan, we should take them back. Making Srila, not politically, but Srila Prabhupada said that India, Pakistan, Burma, Sri Lanka, they should again be reunited on the basis of Vedic culture. Those places, well, Pakistan especially is lost now. The Sindhu River, which is one of the holy rivers, main holy rivers of India, is now fully in Pakistan. Maybe part of it's in China. Srila Prabhupada also said to make the whole world India by Krishna consciousness. So I can only suggest that the devotees who have come from overseas try to understand something about this. Don't just cocoon yourself in Mayapur and say, of course, you come here to concentrate on your own spiritual advancement, and that's important. But we're also supposed to, well, spiritual advancement also goes very, very strongly on the culture that we follow. In fact, traditionally, it's always considered that even to begin any kind of elevated life, to follow the Vedas, one has to be within the Varnashram system. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu superficially rejected Varnashram because it's a material arrangement. It's not directly part of spiritual advancement, but it is the code of living in this world which is suitable for spiritual advancement. So, to understand that culture will very much help us. Without understanding that culture, then if we follow the... We may not even realize, we're talking about this culture, that culture, we may not even realize. You just say, well, I'm just chanting Hare Krishna. But what difference does it make? Well, it does make a difference. Just like, for instance, at the beginning of this session, I asked the men and the women just to sit a little bit apart from each other. And that makes a difference. You may say, well, it doesn't make much difference. But yeah, it does, because when men and women mix up, then a whole different kind of atmosphere is produced, which is not conducive for even civilized human life, what to speak of advanced spiritual consciousness. We might think that's not very important, but then all our acharyas followed that. So if they think it's important, it's important. So also, apart from our own spiritual advancement, there's the whole world. Srila Prabhupada wanted Krishna consciousness to change the face of the world. Spiritual revolution. Along with that, he wanted to introduce Varnashram culture. The two go side by side. So for the benefit of the world, we should try to understand this culture and implement it. So of course not everyone can get into this, but those who are supposed to be brahmanas, they're supposed to be knowledgeable. And you might not, well, one of the qualities of a brahmana is dharma. In the 12 qualities of a brahmana mentioned in the Mahabharata, the first one is dharma, means he follows dharma, means he knows what it is. But it's in traditional culture, it's not something that you're taught in an academic way, but you just imbibe it as you grow up, as you from childhood. So for us coming from the West, and maybe for many Indians also nowadays, who, with the culture, with the advent of TV and the internet, the culture's largely been lost. So we may have to learn it. But brahmanas are supposed to know so many things and teach it to others. We shouldn't think that to be a brahmana means just to have a thread on your shoulder and then you can do some puja. But it's supposed to be a teacher. And especially in Srila Prabhupada's movement, it's meant every member is supposed to think of the benefit not only of himself, but of the whole world. This movement is meant to change the world for the better, by introducing Varnashram culture and Krishna consciousness. The two go together. So there are many things to learn, which we, if we implement in our lives, will be very helpful for us. And actually we should do and create an atmosphere so that people will be impressed by that. Definitely whoever comes to Mayapur, so many people come every day, mostly from West Bengal and from other parts of India and from other parts of the world also. And definitely people are impressed by the buildings, they're impressed by the deities, they're impressed by the kirtan, they're impressed. One of the main attractions among the Bengalis, so many Westerners are there. There, it's something amazing for them that so many Westerners have come to take up a religion which is their religion, in their way of thinking. It's our religion, they're following it. Of course, it's everyone's religion, but culturally it's their religion. So whatever they see, they'll be impressed by. And those who want to take up Krishna consciousness more seriously, they will think that whatever they see in Mayapur is the ideal, is the standard. So apart from being a major tourist attraction, every individual here, if they act in a way which is ideal, you may have read in Srila Prabhupada's books that we want to create an ideal class of men who can give guidance to human society. So they should be ideal by being learned. Again, Brahmana, they should be learned. Brahmana means Pandit. They should know. They should always be reading, studying, learning, trying to understand more and more and more, for their own sake and for the sake of teaching others also. Of course, bhakti doesn't depend on learning. But something, learning is required, and brahmanas are supposed to teach others. So if an atmosphere is created here, an ideal atmosphere, then others can follow. And conversely, if things are not as they should be, people will take that to be the standard. So we should be very careful here in Mayapur especially to know what is the actual Vaishnava, Vedic culture, live according to that, and impart that to others. So that's very brief overview from my side of something that I very strongly feel the need for. And in this regard, I'm trying to implement in some cases, and talking about it, writing about it, trying to communicate this to others, the value of this Vedic culture. The value of the Vedic culture, we can see from this one incident 500 years ago, we can get some little insight that even someone who is performing such a degraded activity as fishing still has full faith in the holy name of Nrisimhadev. Another interesting point just came to mind. He's fishing. Why is he fishing? Why? Because he's born in a fisherman family. That's what he does. There's no question of doing anything else. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions about this, please? Do you have another mic for question asking? You boys all came from Prodatur, is it? Where did you come from? Andhra, yeah. Where in Andhra? Kadapa. Oh, I thought Raghuvanshi was in Prodatur. No, you're all from Kadapa. Okay. All right. What happened to Raghuvanshi? Is he still? Oh, you're translating in Telugu. The boys are? They're from Pradhatur. But that's what I said. But then they said they're from Kadapa. I thought they must be from Pradhatur, having seen you. Yeah, so, please.
I have a question. You mentioned about the Sindhu area in Pakistan. Is it the original place of Vedic culture? Is the Hindu Vedic civilization is in that area?
So yeah, well, it's part of the area, is part of Bharat before he got cut off and put into Pakistan. Sorry? Indus Valley Civilization.
Yeah, it's the original home of Vedic
civilization. Original, what do we call original? It's going on eternal. It's Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma, eternal Dharma, is the Dharma of the soul to serve Krishna. In this material world, Sanatan Dharma is manifested in every age as Varnashram Dharma, Vedic culture. Vedic culture, we can say. Varnashram only actually in, that only comes, it begins in Treta Yuga. When Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glani abhyutanam dharmasya dharma samstarpanata, that refers in the broader sense to Varnashram Dharma. So Varnashram Dharma was being practiced in that area and beyond, actually. Afghanistan, that was also under Vedic culture, and it went over to Buddhism and then Islam. All that area. The whole world was under Parikshit, but specifically this area, at least as far as Afghanistan. We see all these, but even beyond that, there's Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan. Within Russia, there's Tatarstan, it's a Sanskrit word, means place. So, the history that we get from the modern historians needs a lot of rewriting. They say Indus Valley civilization, early civilization, but early means they think that civilization began. When I was a kid, it began 6,000 years ago. Now I think they put it back to 8,000 years or so. They're always changing the dates. But we know, Lord Ram, when did he come? In Treta Yuga. So how long ago was that? Yeah, actually it wasn't this Treta Yuga just before, but it was way, way back, in several yuga cycles before, about 17 million years ago, which isn't really such a long time. So it's going on and on. But by the influence of Kali Yuga, all good things become destroyed, unless there's the chanting of the holy names to offset that. Even in India, of course, there have always been atheists. Otherwise, when Krishna says he comes to destroy the demons, that doesn't mean it was India versus China or something like that. It was the demons within India. So it's not that everyone's pious in India, but even there are so many atheists in India, but if you, many of them, you speak to them, and they can come around and become devotees. Whereas in the West, if they're atheists, they won't become devotees. It's very difficult for them. In fact, the chief minister of West Bengal for many, many years was a communist, Jyoti Bosu. So communism means atheism, but his wife was a Vaishnava. She would, and in South India, the chief minister so many times in Tamil Nadu, on the platform of atheism, he was promoting atheism. And now in his old age, he's directing, not directing, but he's, what's he doing? He's the director of, there's a daily TV series about the life of Ramanuja. The director is actually my disciple, but he writes the script. No, who, I don't, I think the disciple writes, I don't know what he does. Karuna, his name is Karuna Nidhi. But it was his idea. He's centrally involved in having a TV program daily about Ramanujacharya. So I guess that wouldn't happen. We'd like Richard Dawkins to be a devotee. But even, you see, the cultural roots are so deep that even if in the West someone, they stop being an atheist, they'd probably become a Christian, which is it's a big step up, but it's not nearly as good a step up as it is to take up Krishna consciousness. Someone else you're going to ask? Is Satra English, Mayhe? We're having an English session. Next session is Hindi. Okay? Next session is in Hindi. But I'm not going to answer that anyway because it's a huge topic and it's off the subject. We can say what the Dasmul are, but it's a whole big thing. That's
I saw a documentary where some of the families in, I think, Hyderabad, some of the families, they are living in an isolated area and they are not using electricity and they are living like totally Krishna consciousness environment.
You saw a documentary? Oh, that's in Gujarat, I think they made it.
Yes, yeah.
It's in Gujarat. We have near to Hyderabad also, but the film was made about a community that we have in Gujarat. Yeah. No electricity. You bring electricity, and then gradually everything else will come. Internet, TVs. Then you have to pay for the electricity. Then you have to work hard to make the money, and the whole simple living and high thinking is finished. So, no electricity. Then after sundown, what do you do? Chant Hare Krishna. You can't sit working away at your computer. Means also no air conditioning. How to get the idea to do it? Better you go there and see. Go and visit. Where are you from?
I'm from Gwalior,
Madhya Pradesh. Okay. It's not too far. You can go and see. It's actually very simple. That's the whole idea. Keep things as simple as possible. Keep the material needs to a minimum and keep Krishna consciousness to the maximum. Instead of living your life in such a way that you can squeeze in a bit of Krishna consciousness here and there. But Krishna consciousness is central. That means brahmacharis living in temples, they have the opportunity to have a full morning program, full evening program. Grihasthas don't have either. Most Grihastha devotees, if they can squeeze in 16 rounds a day somehow or other, they think they're doing okay. But in the farm community, they have full morning and evening program. Actually, they often don't have a class in the morning. They have it at midday because morning it's hot, so they go out to work in the field. Those who are working in the fields work. Yeah, and they're living among devotees, so at work they're expected to chant Hare Krishna. Not, whereas if you're in an office or what, you're not allowed to chant Hare Krishna. So it's a conducive situation for Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada wanted, in his kindness and wisdom. So you can visit, those who would like to visit can visit. We have started three communities, more or less at the same time, of which one is going fairly well, quite well actually, in Gujarat. And the other two, one is in Telangana, near to Hyderabad, and the other ones in Tamil Nadu. They're still going on with some struggle. It's not an easy thing to get it going. One thing, it needs a lot of money. So if any of you have a few crores in your back pocket so you don't know what to do with, you could help that way. Actually, the whole ISKCON society was supposed to get behind it. Otherwise, if we have to do it with individual householders, it's very difficult because land in India is so expensive. Even most of India... Last year I was in America and one devotee told me he wanted to get some land and have a little home farm. I said, well, how can you afford it? He was surprised by the question because in India someone, unless they're really well-to-do, they can't... So I was thinking of buying 10 acres. Hardly anyone in India could even think of buying 10 acres of land with their own money. And he's doing a job as a park attendant or something. I said, I can save up a little bit. And he told me the price. It's so much less than the price of land in India. I'm not talking about the relative price, but the actual price. If you translate dollars to rupees, the land is actually much cheaper than in India. For some reason, I don't know exactly why. Anyway, it does take some money to purchase land, then some infrastructure, I mean some houses and this and that. And then you chant Hare Krishna, grow your own food. It's, as our devotees happily discovered, it's really not that very difficult to grow food. It's not that you have to go to university for 4 years to study it. Although, that leads me into another anecdote, that just about 3 or 4 years ago, I met a devotee in India, from Slovenia. So I spoke to him and then he told me his background. His parents, like most people in Slovenia, they live on a small farm. And so I asked him, what are you doing? Well, I'm studying in the university. I said, why you bother with that? Do your parents have a farm? Just live on the farm. He said, well, nowadays, if you want to do farming, now that we're in the European Union, you have to have a university degree. I mean, for thousands of years, people were farming and they didn't know how to read or write. Now they have to have a university degree so they can do... You're not allowed to do farming unless you have a university degree. Why do they know? Now, because you have to learn all about these different pesticides and genetically modified, for, I don't know, what all kinds of demoniac things they call farming. Anyway, the European Union will get rid of all the... nonsense small farmers in their idea and make huge farms and destroy everything. I saw that in Lithuania, that they joined the European Union, the whole economy is based on small farms, finished. Overnight, practically, all the small farms were finished because they got cheap food with no food value imported from other parts of the world. And also, they have so many rules for the farms. Your barn has to be this size and it has to have... They've been going on for generations. All of a sudden they had all these rules which the people couldn't afford to adjust all their property, and then they're not allowed to farm anymore. All kinds of things. If people used to pick berries from the trees and sell them on the side of the road, no, forbidden in the European Union. So it's demoniac. They want to destroy all the small farmers. I'm very afraid in India also. We discussed it among all our devotees. What are you going to do? They're making this society in such a way. They won't allow us to have the Gurukul. And now they're making so many rules. Now in Maharashtra, the BJP government, which is supposed to be pro-Hindu, they introduced a rule that there should be no discrimination against... One of the things they said... about against women in menstruation. They should be allowed to come to temples. And you know, he said, we should, what did he say? Fadnavis. He's a Brahmin by caste, but he has a Persian name, as do so many. I mean, so he said, we should dispense with outmoded outmoded, what did he say? Outmoded, outdated ruler. Who is he to decide what's outmoded and outdated? It's offensive to come, just like if someone has dysentery, it's offensive to go to the temple in an unclean state. And who is he to decide what's outmoded and outdated? So, where can we go in the world to practice the things that we need to practice? It's just like America, it was founded by people running away from Europe who wanted to practice religion in the way that they felt the need to do so. So where are we going to run away to? Where can you go? Where the governments are not making all these rules, you can't do this, you can't do that. You have to teach the children to have, they have to have the government curriculum, all nonsense. Hare Krishna. Okay, any other question? All right, well, we'll finish there. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.